In a world overflowing with noise, shallow takes, and information that evaporates the moment you hear it, Selenius Media exists for one purpose: to give you depth. Whether the subject is philosophy, psychology, history, science, artificial intelligence, literature, or the shape of the future, every series we publish is built on one idea: that thinking clearly is a form of survival. You're listening to a Selenius Media production. Our catalog spans dozens of long-form, story-driven shows, from Western moral philosophy for beginners to pioneers of psychology and psychiatry, from AI, an uncertain future, to the classical music giants. Each series is crafted to give you more than facts. It gives you the context, the conflict, and the human meaning behind the ideas that shaped our world. If you enjoy this program, explore the rest of our library. Every show is designed to stand alone, but together, they form a larger project. A guided tour of the forces, intellectual, emotional, political, technological, that built the world we live in and the world we're about to enter. Visit SeleniusMedia.com to discover new series, follow your favorites, and support the work that allows us to create long-form, high-fidelity educational storytelling. Now, let's begin. Produced by Selenius Media. In the early 3rd century BCE, when the sun rose over Athens and spilled light across the agora, the painted stoa was already beginning to hum with small clusters of conversation. Merchants setting up stalls, potters checking their wares, youths gathering in groups to trade jabs or practice wrestling moves in the dust. Amid the bustle, a tall, weather-beaten man walked with slow, deliberate steps toward the stoa poikile. His shoulders were thick from years of manual labor, his hands rough and scarred, his face deeply lined like cracked leather. He did not look like a philosopher. He looked like a mule driver, a porter, a farmer. And for a long time, he was exactly that. His name was Cleanthes of Assos, and when he arrived in Athens from his native Troad, sometime around 300 BCE, he had almost no money, no status, and no formal education. What he had, though, was endurance. And it was that endurance, physical, moral, intellectual, that allowed him to become the second head of the Stoic school after Zeno, and one of the most quietly influential moral thinkers in antiquity. If Zeno founded the doctrine, Cleanthes gave it muscle. If Zeno drew the lines, Cleanthes shaded them. If Zeno gave Stoicism its austere blueprint, Cleanthes embodied the grueling, day-to-day discipline needed to live that blueprint out. His life became a model of slow, patient, resilient transformation, the kind of transformation Stoicism, at its core, demands. Cleanthes was born around 330 BCE in Assos, a coastal city in Asia Minor, known more for its stone quarries than for its cultural refinement. His father may have been a farmer or craftsman. Whatever the family trade, Cleanthes grew up working with his hands, hauling, lifting, plowing, enduring the heat of the sun and the weight of physical strain. Later Stoic writers would make metaphors of this, saying he built his mind the way others build their bodies. One repetition at a time. If Zeno's Stoicism was a clean architectural drawing, Cleanthes was the stone itself, heavy, dense, shaped by force and friction. According to tradition, when Cleanthes first arrived in Athens, he had just 4 drachmas to his name. That sum would not buy even a week of food, and certainly not a place to live. He slept outdoors or in whatever shelter he could find. He took whatever jobs were available. He carried water for gardeners. He ground grain at night. He worked under the orders of bakers and builders. In the daylight hours, exhausted and covered in dust, he went to the stoa to listen to Zeno. Zeno noticed him. How could he not? The man would stand for hours without moving, listening intently, barely blinking, as though forcing his brain to absorb each idea by sheer will. Many young men with aristocratic bearing drifted in and out of the stoa, attracted by the novelty or the intellectual style. Cleanthes stayed. He stayed even when his stomach growled, even when his legs ached, even when he had to leave early to haul water through the streets until dawn. This, for Zeno, was the hallmark of a serious student, not brilliance, not quickness, not rhetorical flair. but endurance. The capacity to remain, to listen, to wrestle, to return again the next day. Cleanthes became, in a sense, the first Stoic athlete of the mind, trained not through privilege or comfort, but through extreme effort. His poverty earned him mockery. Other philosophers sneered that he should give up philosophy and return to manual labor. Some claimed that no man who had to work through the night to survive could possibly understand the subtleties of logic, ethics, or physics. Cleanthes ignored them. If he was carrying water in the dark to pay for daylight wisdom, so be it. There is a story, almost certainly embellished, but too fitting to ignore, that Cleanthes once appeared before an Athenian magistrate because someone accused him of idleness. The charge was ludicrous. Cleanthes produced as witnesses the people who had hired him for night labor. A gardener he hauled water for, a baker he assisted. The court dismissed the accusation. Zeno, hearing the story, laughed and said, "This man has strength for two lives, one for philosophy, one for survival." Over time, Cleanthes became Zeno's most devoted pupil. He may not have been the most brilliant. Chrysippus, who succeeded him, would become the intellectual systematizer of Stoicism. But Cleanthes was the one who embodied endurance, clarity, and the moral seriousness of the early Stoa. He slowly, steadily absorbs Zeno's lessons that virtue is the only true good, that external things such as wealth, health, and reputation are indifferent, that the world is governed by a divine rational fire, logos, that the wise person aligns their will with nature and fate. Where others debated these ideas in lecture halls, Cleanthes tested them while carrying buckets of water uphill at midnight. The doctrines did not remain abstractions. They became the framework through which he interpreted exhaustion, hunger, humiliation, hope. One of the most striking aspects of Cleanthes is that he turned patience, a trait often dismissed as simple endurance, into a philosophical power. Zeno once said that he could trust Cleanthes with a philosophical doctrine, the way he could trust a strong ox with a heavy load. The praise may sound backhanded, but Zeno meant it sincerely. Intelligence without endurance, he believed, evaporates. Endurance without intelligence can grow. Cleanthes proved him right. He eventually became Zeno's successor around 262 BCE. By then he was in his late 60s, his body scarred by decades of labor, and his mind refined by decades of self-discipline. His elevation to scholarch, the head of the school, was not based on rhetorical brilliance but on moral authority. The Athenians respected him. They remembered him as the man who worked at night and studied by day, who never complained, never flaunted his learning, never sought fame. If Zeno founded the building, Cleanthes kept it standing. One of Cleanthes' few surviving works, a short fragment, but one of the most beautiful in all ancient philosophy, is the Hymn to Zeus, a poem that captures the Stoic understanding of the divine. It is both prayer and philosophical manifesto. In the hymn, Zeus is not a bearded Olympian hurling lightning bolts. Zeus is the rational fire that permeates everything, the law that binds the cosmos, the reason that structures all events. Cleanthes praises Zeus not for miracles, but for order, not for favoritism, but for universal lawfulness. He writes, "Lead me, Zeus, and you too, destiny, wherever your decrees assign me. I follow without hesitation, but if I refuse, I will follow still." These lines became a cornerstone of Stoic ethics. They express the Stoic idea that freedom does not mean escaping fate, but willingly aligning oneself with it. Fate leads, the wise follow, the foolish are dragged. Cleanthes' version of this is not fatalistic resignation, but active consent. The universe is rational. The wise person accepts the place he is assigned and performs it well. This hymn isn't merely theological. It tells us a great deal about Cleanthes' character. Having endured poverty, mockery, and physical strain, he did not interpret his hardships as cosmic punishment. He saw them as assignments from nature, tasks given to him to strengthen his soul. The man who hauled water for years understood better than most that the universe does not owe us comfort. It offers us a role. Our dignity lies in performing it virtuously. Cleanthes also contributed to Stoic physics, arguing that the cosmos is held together by tension, a concept later Stoics called tonos. He believed the universe is a living organism, and that the divine fire acts like the tensile strength of a bowstring, binding opposites into harmony. This physical theory is directly connected to Stoic ethics. For if the universe is a living, rational whole, and if its order is held together by a kind of divine tension, then moral life becomes a matter of living in accordance with that tension, not resisting it. Where some philosophers imagined the good life as ease or relaxation, Cleanthes imagined it as proper tension, a soul tuned like a musical string. Too loose, and it produces no sound. Too tight, and it snaps. Stoic virtue lies in the balance, steady, resilient, harmonized with nature's law. Another of Cleanthes' significant contributions came from a story that nearly ended his life. When he was already old, nearly 90, some sources say, he developed a mouth ulcer or jaw inflammation, accounts vary. A physician told him to avoid solid food for a time. Cleanthes obeyed. The inflammation improved. The physician then told him he could resume eating normally. Cleanthes paused and said, "No reason to go back now." He refused all food and slowly starved himself to death. To our ears, this borders on the shocking or pathological. But in the ancient world, particularly among Stoics, voluntary exit from life when one's rational functioning was impaired or one's duties completed was not considered suicide, but a dignified departure. Zeno, too, is said to have chosen his own end. Cleanthes' decision reflects a particular Stoic understanding, that life has value only insofar as it enables virtue, and when the body compromises the ability to act rationally, one may choose to withdraw. Whether Cleanthes' death was an act of philosophical clarity or an old man's stubbornness is a question that will never be resolved. But his contemporaries saw it as a final demonstration of his consistency. Where Cleanthes shines most clearly is in the ethical tone he set for Stoicism. If Zeno gave the doctrine its bones, Cleanthes gave it its temperament, firmness, endurance, sincerity. He was not a master logician. That role would belong to Chrysippus. Nor was he a dazzling writer like Seneca. He was, instead, the archetype of a Stoic practitioner. His emphasis on practice over cleverness shaped the school profoundly. He taught that philosophy was not an ornament for the educated, but the discipline by which one becomes a good human being. Every impression must be examined. Every desire must be interrogated. Every emotion must be understood as a judgment. Every day must include self-scrutiny. His life was a continuous exercise in distinguishing what is up to us from what is not up to us. Poverty was not up to him. Labor was not up to him. Mockery was not up to him. But how he responded to these things, that was his domain, his moral battlefield. And on that battlefield, he never faltered. From Cleanthes flows a certain kind of Stoic warmth. Yes, warmth. Stoicism is often caricatured as cold or unemotional, but Cleanthes shows a different aspect. The warmth of devotion, of gratitude, of awe. His hymn to Zeus is suffused with cosmic affection. He does not merely endure fate, he praises it. He sees the universe not as indifferent or hostile, but as suffused with purpose, order, and rational beauty. To him, aligning one's soul with the cosmos is not grim duty, but an act of reverence. This reverence for cosmic order has moral implications. If all humans partake of the divine logos, then all are kin. Cleanthes helped develop the Stoic idea of oikeiosis, the process by which beings recognize what is natural and appropriate to them, extending concern outward from self to family to city to humanity. Zeno had sketched this idea, but Cleanthes deepened it by emphasizing that the rational fire in each human connects us to all others. Duty is not a burden, but a natural expression of shared rationality. Although much of Cleanthes' writing is lost, fragments show he was especially interested in the discipline of attention. He urged students to train their minds the way athletes train their bodies: repetition, vigilance, patience. He compared the rational faculty to a garden. Neglected, it fills with weeds. Tended, it bears fruit. No one, he insisted, becomes wise suddenly. Wisdom is grown, not granted. From the standpoint of your Western moral philosophy series, Queen Thes is vital because he represents the shift from philosophical discovery to philosophical internalization. Zeno founded Stoicism. Queen Thes lived it. He made Stoic ethics into a daily discipline of mental posture, emotional regulation, and moral endurance. He built the bridge between Stoic theory and Stoic practice. He also set the emotional tone for later Stoicism. Seneca's letters, Epictetus's discourses, Marcus Aurelius's meditations all are suffused with the Cleanthean mood, firm, patient, resilient, devoted to harmony with nature. If Zeno is Stoicism's architect, Cleanthes is its stonemason and the later Stoics. Walk through halls he helped shape. His life also illustrates one of Stoicism's most counterintuitive claims, that external circumstances do not determine a person's worth. Cleanthes had every disadvantage: poverty, hard labor, lack of pedigree, and yet he became one of the most respected moral voices in Athens. He earned a statue beside those of illustrious statesmen, but he did not seek honor, and when it came to him, he accepted it with the same equanimity with which he had accepted scorn. For modern listeners, Cleanthes' story resonates because it demonstrates that philosophy is not for the privileged alone. It is for anyone willing to test their assumptions, discipline their impulses, and shape their character through deliberate effort. In an age obsessed with speed, convenience, shortcuts, and instant gratification, Cleanthes offers a radically different model: slow mastery through repetition, endurance through hardship, understanding through labor. To follow his example is to remember that the struggle for inner resilience is not glamorous and not quick, but it is possible, and it is the only struggle fully under our control. Standing under the painted stoa, with the noise of the city around him and Zeno's voice echoing in his ears, Cleanthes began a transformation that would shape Stoicism for centuries. And as he aged, as his back bent further, as his steps slowed, he became the living demonstration that virtue is not a matter of brilliance or luck, but of unwavering, disciplined commitment to the rational order of things. Cleanthes reminds us that philosophy is not primarily spoken, it is lived.
Midnight rails under silver moon, dusty boots on a winding road. A shadow's the only friend I've known since she packed up and let me go. Empty whiskey bottle on the sea, her laugh still echoes in my bones. Saddle's heavy with memories. I ride alone where the wind still blows. Nowhere else to be. Nowhere else to be. Nowhere else to be. The horizon gold, but it don't warm a lonesome soul. Every town I pass feels half her size. Every trail's haunted by goodbye. I whisper prayers to open skies, hoping someday my heart'll find a brand new path beyond the pain, where broken hearts can heal in time. Nowhere else to be. Nowhere else to be. nowhere else to be, nowhere else to be. No.